advertisement paid for and selected by WNYC.
Welcome to Inside Rush, Snakes and Arrows on the Rush Radio Network. My name is Lou Brutus. A great pleasure to welcome Alex Lifeson and Geddy Lee of Rush to the studio. Guys, great to see you. Alex, how are you?
I'm very well. Thanks, Lou. And you?
I'm doing great. Geddy, yourself, how are you?
I'm excellent. Happy to be here.
I guess we begin by talking about the new album. Where did this album come from? What were the germs of ideas for the songs? And kind of walk us through.
The whole thing began with Alex and I deciding to start writing in a more casual atmosphere. Alex lives only two blocks away from me, so he would come over to my house, and we went down into my studio basement, which is really kind of more like a den. And we would just start plunking around on acoustic guitar and bass and talk and jam. And we decided to take an approach of writing this time where Alex played acoustic all the time instead of electric, which was a bit of a throwback to the way we used to do things many, many years ago when we didn't have the option of writing at home. We would mostly be writing on the road in cars and in station wagons and hotel rooms. And there was something about writing that way that was very pure. So that was the decision we made, and we started writing that way, and we, almost from the beginning, had very good luck, and songs were coming along, and ideas were coming along. We had Neil emailing us lyrics, and it's also the first time we had started a project without Neil in the room with us, or at least in the same building as us. We wanted to get a head start, and so after about 5 weeks of that, we progressed to the point where we needed to get together with him, and he came to Toronto for about 5 weeks, and we spent that time in a proper studio working together and getting those songs to a more finished point. So that's kind of how the thing got started.
On this initial run of work where you're on the acoustics here and trying to figure things out, would you qualify these as songs, or are these just bits that are going to be turned into full songs later?
I'd say they're song sketches, meaning that they are indicative of the song structure. You know, the vocal melodies are already present. Some semblance of a rhythm track, which is usually thrown together by Alex on an electric drum kit. So it's not a Rush song in the sense it doesn't have Neil's part until he gets there. And by the end of the session with Neil, of course, we have a much more representative version of those songs with drums. So we do it in stages. Sketch one is Alex and myself and a drum machine who is very well behaved. And they never complain, these drum machines. They
play just enough.
They do exactly what you tell them to do, just like all drummers should. And then you go into the next stage where you bring the noisy drummer in, and they're much more opinionated. And then, of course, everything goes to hell. But you end up with a song that sounds much more like a Rush song.
Far Cry is the first tune from the album. What were the origins of that tune, and what sort of insight do you think you can give us to it?
Far Cry was one of the later tunes to be written. I think we wrote it in late September. We'd taken the summer off. We'd met with Nick Meskulin, it's our producer, at the end of May, as we were finishing that stage of the writing, and then had the summer off and got back into it in September. The great thing about that song, Far Cry, it was one of those unique numbers where it came together very, very quickly. We had a really good day that day. We had a lot of great ideas flowing, and they knitted together quite well.
Let's give it a listen. The tune is Far Cry from the new Rush album, Snakes and Arrows. You can find it in stores this Tuesday. This is Inside Rush, Snakes and Arrows on the Rush Radio Network. Far Cry from Rush. You are listening to Inside Rush, Snakes and Arrows on the Rush Radio Network. Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson are my guests. Alex, you had mentioned the producer that you chose for the album, the great Nick Raskolin. What was it about him that you guys discovered that thought he would be a good guy to talk to, and then what got him past that initial stage to be the guy for Rush to work with?
We had a list of a number of producers that we were interested in working with that we thought would be great for the project, and we were reaching out to many of them at the time. A lot of the guys that we wanted to work with were extremely busy. One of them was Rick Rubin. Nick was a longtime fan. I think Rush was the first band that he went to a live concert when he was 11 years old with his mom too. When he heard through Rick, and Rick's a friend of his, that he wasn't available, he didn't have the time for it. Nick thought, well, here's an opportunity, and he approached us, which was refreshing for us. And he was very, very enthusiastic. He came up to Toronto to meet with Getty and me as we were just finishing that stage of writing in May. And we had a lovely meeting at Getty's place, sitting outside, and Nick was talking about music and the things that he felt strongly about songwriting and the importance of the chorus and all of these sort of things that were just the things we wanted to hear. And he had this infectious enthusiasm, and he's just an absolutely terrific guy, but he's very bright and he's a true music lover. We went down to Ged's studio and started listening to some stuff, and we played a few songs for him that were pretty rough sketches. And immediately he started playing air guitar and air drums and getting right into it, and Ged and I would sort of glance at each other and think, oh boy, what do we have here? But it was so honest. And
it's his charm. It's part of his charm.
That is him, totally. He loves music so much. And he reassured us that if he was going to work with us, he was going to make the best Rush record that we ever made. And we gave it some thought and thought we would, you know, take the chance and work with this unknown person.
Well, it wasn't really unknown.
No, right? we knew by his
pretty darn good
of his
track
work.
Record. Yeah,
of course. What I meant by unknown, we'd never met him before. We'd never. And it's always important, I think, that you meet a prospective producer or an engineer early on, just to see if you get along. And the more we got to know Nick, the more I think we grew to love him and respect him and trust him. Mostly trust him.
How has it been for you guys with producers through the years, particularly now where you can, you know, given the vagaries of schedules, you can get really anybody that you want, I would imagine. Are you looking for people who can push you or people that you can, even for all the records you have made, absorb from, or is it a combination of different things?
Well, it's funny you say that. I mean, it's really not as easy as you think to get a producer that you want. Especially because a lot of young producers try to stay away from veteran bands because they don't feel they can really bring their own personality to the project. And they would much rather discover something and be known for having taken something and making something out of nothing. So, and also the difficult thing is we've made so many records that when you interview a lot of young producers, I mean, we've made three times the records that they've made. So a lot of times there's not that depth of experience that you believe you can really respect their opinion from, you know. And that's why Nick was such a refreshing change, because not only was he passionate about music, the proof was in the pudding. The things that he played for us, that he produced by these various groups, Stone Sour and Foo Fighters, and they sounded really good. What really impressed me was when he was playing us a song by, say, Stone Sour, and he would point out a nuance in the vocal melody, and he would just kind of glaze over like he was going to sing it, you know? And that tells me that this is a passionate guy. That's what I want to see in the studio. If somebody's going to convince me to play something in a way that I'm not used to playing, I want to know that he believes it, he's passionate about it, and he's not doing it just to pump up his own sense of self-importance. And I really think that was the key that made us want to listen to him in the studio and pay attention to what he had to say seriously.
The next tune we have up is Spindrift. What can you tell us about it?
Spindrift is a real beast of a song. That was one of the first songs we played for Nick, in fact, when he came to see us. And he loved the main riff of it immediately. But it's also, in a strange way, one of those songs that we kept coming back to and tweaking and fiddling with. There was always some little thing to fiddle with it. But I'm really pleased with it in the end. It's got a ferocious spirit and beautiful melodies, and it's a cool tune, I think.
Let's give it a listen. Getty Lee and Alex Lifeson of Rush are our guests. This is Inside Rush, the new album Snakes and Arrows, the tune Spindrift. The Rush Radio Network. The song is Spindrift. It's from the new Rush album, Snakes and Arrows. You're listening to Inside Rush. Welcome back to Inside Rush, Snakes and Arrows. Getty Lee and Alex Lifeson are my guests. Neil had a great quote I read. I hope I get it right. Many lyrics are sent, few are chosen. If you would explain that. I think I understand it, but explain if you would.
Well, it's kind of self-explanatory. We usually get a flood of lyrical ideas from him. And not all of them I feel I can do something with. I always splay them out in front of me when Alex and I are working. And certain ones grab me more. Because we're a partnership, you know, I have to sing his lyrics. I have to feel his lyrics in order for me to do a convincing job of singing them. And some of them just don't hit me the right way or don't grab me in the way that he would have imagined. And so I just go to the ones that mean the most to me. And sometimes it'll just be, you know, two lines in a song, and I'll pull them out and I'll go, you know, these lines are great, and we'll fit them in a song and give him the song with those two lines, and he'll go back and restructure a new song around those two lines. And he's quite happy to do that. He's really a great collaborator in that sense.
Is it a case of it's almost like an endless stream of lyrics that are coming, or do these things come slowly and you have to sort of wait for the next set?
Yeah, they come in bunches. Usually he's got a bunch that he's been working on, or some left over, or some ideas that maybe last time around he wasn't confident about. But after time, he's read them and go, I like these. And that's the case with the song The Larger Bowl on this album. That was a song that he'd written quite a while ago. It's written as a kind of word exercise. There's a technique called a pantoum, which is where you start a verse with one line, and you do four lines, and then the second line of the first verse becomes the first line of the second verse, and so on and so forth. And so it's kind of like a cycle that you cycle through. That was something he was surprised that I gravitated to, but I liked it. I liked the sentiment. I liked what it said, and it had a universality. And that's what I look for in his lyrics. The lyrics I don't usually gravitate to are the ones that are usually a bit personal in nature, and I feel like I can't bring myself to them.
Let's give The Larger Bowl a listen. It is new from Rush. You are listening to Inside Rush, Snakes and Arrows on the Rush Radio Network. From the new album Snakes and Arrows, that is Rush. The tune is called The Larger Bowl. Welcome back to Inside Rush, Snakes and Arrows. I'm Lou Brutus. Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson of Rush are my guests. Alex, as you look at lyrics, how are you adding life to these things to help them form and take life?
I think I take that approach once Geddy starts to really get a sense of how the lyrics are going to shape up. We read the lyrics together when we first get them and we discuss them. But the dissection that takes place after that is really interesting for me to observe, because Geddy will focus, as he said, on a line or a word or a couplet or something like that that really catches the essence, perhaps, of what Neil was after, at least the essence of what those lyrics are about. And once he develops it and gets a sense of where it's going, I can see more clearly what the emotional connection musically is to that, and then for me it becomes much easier about how I want to shape or mold the guitar parts or the textures or sounds.
The next tune we have up is Bravest Face. Anything you can give us insight wise?
Bravest Face is one of the kind of diversions on this album for me. That song was born as a kind of electric song and as a kind of a rocker. When Alex and I were working at home, one day I left the studio to go upstairs to do something, and I remember coming back into the room, and Alex was playing this hypnotic, fantastic little four-chord progression. But I just loved it and immediately ran to the computer, turned on record, and started recording it, and I immediately knew that would be the verse of the song, because what we had for the verse of that song was just not working for me. And then when I heard this piece, I said, this is great. And after I put it down, I said, go lie down for a minute. And so I plugged in the microphone, I turned it on, and I started singing those lyrics that I had previously sung before to different music. I started singing them over that chord pattern, and boom, that was the song. It was just magic.
Let us give it a listen. The tune is called Bravest Face. It is from Rush's new album, Snakes and Arrows. You can find it in stores this Tuesday. It's all part of Inside Rush, Snakes and Arrows, here on the Rush Radio Network. Bravest Face. It is from Rush, the new album, Snakes and Arrows. Welcome back to Inside Rush, Snakes and Arrows on the Rush Radio Network. Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson are my guests. I think probably the most interesting title, without having heard anything, the most interesting title to look at was Working Them Angels, because it has so many different connotations that come to one's heads. Tell me about the song.
Well, Working Them Angels, I guess, kind of began in the basement. Again, it was one of those early songs that we wrote. In fact, I think it was originally something I put together myself just on acoustic guitar. Al, I think you were down in Florida or something
for a couple of days.
And I was bored one morning, so I just went down there and just was plunking around. And I'm a very simplistic guitar player, so that's why the chordal structure is very simple. It began as a song called Traveling Music, which was more about Neil's book, Traveling Music, which was kind of autobiographical. And again, that's an example we were talking about lyrics, where I felt it was too autobiographical. It really didn't feel comfortable singing about his life so directly. We kind of shaped it into a little bit of a different direction and made it, you know, a little more universal about how someone is sort of looking out for you sometimes. It feels like you're begging favor with the gods above, you know, to make sure that you stay on the right road or still survive. And, you know, in Neil's case, he was talking about that horrible journey after his tragedy to back to the land of the living, and he felt very often like he was really asking those angels to work overtime, you know, to take, you know, make sure he stayed with it and kept his thing together. But I think in the end now it turned into a song that more people can relate to, and it's more universal about that thing and how we live our lives. And sometimes we take risks and we go through moments where we can't believe we got through them unscathed. And that's when we've really had, you know, a guardian angel looking out for us and working overtime. And
musically, it's really interesting how that song developed. I remember coming back and hearing it, and I thought, wow, this is really cool. We started working on it, and the song is in 3/4 in the time signature of a waltz, and it has that thing, and it's always a challenge in rock music to play to 3/4 because it has that swing, and it's sometimes difficult to make it powerful and take it somewhere else. And as we worked on it, as we developed it, we came to the choruses, and we shift from the 3/4 to the 4/4, which gives it so much more of so much more impact. Empower it. This song is probably my favorite song on the record. And for me, I got it an opportunity to mess around with some mandolins in the middle section, which is a little bit of a departure rather than a standard guitar solo.
The song is Working Them Angels. It is from Rush's new CD, Snakes and Arrows. It'll be in stores this coming Tuesday. So let's give it a listen. Working Them Angels on Inside Rush, Snakes and Arrows. Welcome back to Inside Rush, Snakes and Arrows on the Rush Radio Network. Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson are my guests. If you guys would please, there has been some very interesting, as always for Rush albums, but artwork that is very thought-provoking. And of course, I'm already trying to match the images up with the lyrics and the songs. But what can you tell us about it?
Well, Neil is really the point man for all the album graphics. He takes great pleasure out of doing that, and he works closely with Hugh Syme, who's our longtime art director. The idea this time was to have an album cover for each song, and to make a booklet that was rich in visuals, and that each visual somehow or another was a, I guess, impression of that song. And so that's the way it came out. And there was a game called Leela, and this gentleman had written a book about it and given meaning to all the squares in a more mystical sense. And so he found this cover art for this Leela book and brought it to our attention just to show us out of curiosity. But we all responded quite strongly to it and thought, well, maybe we can get the rights to use that as our album cover. And so we did that, and that's a really kind of beautiful, mystical, you know, piece that represents a lot of the different elements and thoughts and concepts that exist lyrically throughout the album.
The one particular line where the title comes from is from Armor and Sword, I believe. How does that all tie into the rest of this song?
Well, Armor and Sword, the first line of the song is, the snakes and arrows a child is heir to are enough to leave a thousand cuts. I found that to be a very powerful line. Really, I think one of the best lines he's ever written. You know, you think about that for a minute, and you think about what a child is susceptible to growing up in your environment. And if you're not careful, you actually can impart, in a sense, a kind of poison on this innocent soul. And so people that live in radical circles are, in a way, imposing this road on their children without them realizing it, you know. And the song deals with, of course, different kinds of religious extremism. And that one aspect of that verse, it's not kind of what the whole song is about, but it's an aspect of what the song is about. And that is the innocence that are affected by the atmosphere that we create in our home. I found that very powerful, and the snakes and arrows things became very representative to me. And I thought it would be a great title for the album for that reason.
Alex, your thoughts on the music?
It's a very dark song. It has a lot of weight and power to it. It's very intense. It's a long song. It's 6.5 minutes. It's been a while since we've written songs of that length for an album. But it goes through many very dynamic, powerful stages. In the verses, it's a breakdown that's quite intimate with an acoustic guitar and a single voice and very plaintive. And then it builds from there and becomes more of the statement. And certainly when it comes to the middle, there's an intensity to it that really brings home the message of the song.
It is called Armor and Sword. It is new from Rush, the Snakes and Arrows album. You're listening to Inside Rush, Snakes and Arrows, the tune Armor and Sword. I'm Lou Brutus. It has been my great pleasure to have Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson of Rush opening up their hearts and heads about the album. Guys, before I let you go, a couple of things in regard to the tour to celebrate the album. The album is, of course, coming out this Tuesday, May 1st. I know you don't like to tip your hands too much, but you guys always have great tricks up your sleeves in regard to what happens on stage and what you want to do in relation to the record and everything. What are you guys concocting right now?
We're trying to come up with a lot of ideas that have no meaning.
But isn't that in itself a concept?
Why, you're right.
Damn. Discovered again. We're having some fun designing the show, and it's in the really early stages of design, so I can't tell you, even if I wanted to tell you, that it's just too many things that are up in the air now. But rest assured, it will be a lot of fun visually.
Well, I wish you luck on it all, and cannot thank you enough for the time. It is always intensely interesting and fun to speak to you guys. Alex Lifeson, Geddy Lee, thank you so much.
Thank you, Lou.
Thank you.
That's great.
You've been listening to Inside Rush, Snakes and Arrows. Thank you for joining us here on the Rush Radio Network.